6 seconds to go. Comes in to Tucker. Ewing sets a screen. The shot is off. Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
Stricken Roll. This is episode 17. I'm your host, Shwini Fu, as always. And I am joined by not a first time, but first time in a long time guest. His name is Jordan Cohen.
Hey, Shwini, how's it going?
I'm good, man. I was gonna say you can find him on Twitter at sports_by_stats. Doesn't tweet that much about basketball nowadays. Mostly just random tweets about women's soccer teams that I have no, like, it's just players I don't know at all. And then it'll be like, let's go Spirit. And I'm like, I have no fucking idea what you're talking about right now. But also a lot of Chelsea stuff. And during the Cavs season, you will see Cavs tweets there. But I did want to have you on mostly to talk a little bit about the Cleveland Cavaliers, who I think are a team of great interest. But before we get started, I do have to make an announcement that Strickland has Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There's a number of tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland every Friday that I do with Prez. You also get access to the Strickland mailbag, the newly revamped Strickland mailbag, I should add, that will be hosted by one Andrew Steele. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation about the Knicks and basketball never stops, especially now, as we're getting into the home stretch, entering draft season. There's further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to this pod right here, Solo Pod, Stricken Roll, that I do every week. Also get access to wonderful weekly articles by Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best Knicks and basketball writers in the business. There's further tiers even beyond that. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. You will get access to a variety of benefits, like merchandise discounts, live watch parties, listening in on pod recordings, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly. If you choose to subscribe, thank you so much. And even if you don't, thank you anyway, because none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, let's get started. Look, Jordan, you're here to talk a little bit about the Cleveland Cavaliers, who had a very weird season. I think they started off pretty slow, then Colin Sexton gets hurt. I think after, 11 games he played this year? He barely played. And then they just went on a fucking tear. It looked like almost dead certain they're going to make the playoffs, and then everybody on the team got injured. Literally everybody on the team other than Darius Garland got injured, and they end up, dropping into the play-in. They lose to Brooklyn, and then they lose to Atlanta. I don't think it's, I think for the most part, because of the injuries, everybody just kind of like understood what happened. And I don't, it feels like everybody's like that middle chunk of the season. I mean, it was beyond the middle. It was 50 games where, yeah, quite honestly, I thought the Cavs looked like a top five team in the East. I feel like everybody understands that's more the true representation of the team, or am I off on that? Or like, were people like, well, the injuries revealed these fucking, the Achilles heel of this team? From the outside looking in, it feels like there's kind of an understanding of like, okay, look, this is what happened. This team's in good shape.
Yeah, I think so. Some of the quote unquote analytics crowd, and I say quote unquote because there's like a group that will throw out like analytical trites and say, oh, well, it turns out that a team's record over an 82 game season tends to be about how good the team is. And it's like, well, yeah, but I think that the predictive value of that in this case is strange, because so I actually think the last time I was on was right after Sexton got hurt. And like that first, those first like.
Didn't we, weren't we both like, I think this is actually going to be fine?
Yeah, yeah. It was like the first month of the season and we just did not look good. And then Sexton gets hurt. And then within about a week, Darius Garland just becomes a all-star level point guard. Like pretty instantaneously. And so there's from about like, I think it's like game 14 through game 50 or so, where you get Ricky Rubio, Darius Garland, and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, all healthy. And like Rubio's a weird one to throw in there because he gets hurt about halfway through the year and then never plays again for the Cavs. But like when he was playing, I mean, the Cavs defense was just incredible. I mean, Rubio, Garland, and Mobley, and the stat may not be 100% right, but if I recall correctly, they had like a 95 defensive rating, like which is just, I mean, kind of crazy for a rookie, a point guard who supposedly isn't good at defense, and Ricky Rubio. But I think that that also shows that Garland really improved on defense. And when those two, Mobley and Allen, were playing, the Cavs played like this super aggressive perimeter defense. And it didn't matter because even if your guards and Lauri Markkanen, who evidently can play small forward, if they got beat, Allen and Mobley covered. And then Rubio gets hurt. The Cavs still look okay. Like Lamar Stevens starts playing more then. He's really good defensively. Okoro plays some more and he's good. And then Jared Allen gets hurt. And when Jared Allen gets hurt, you start to see the cracks, and then Mobley gets hurt. And so then the team just fell apart. And even when Mobley comes back and then Allen comes back, I think like right before the play-in start.
Well, I think didn't Allen come back? I think he came back for
the play-in.
Yeah, for the Atlanta game. Yeah.
And he looked good in that game too. But yeah. It was just one of those things where they could never really get it going back. And like there was Kevin Love was great coming off the bench. And there were some games towards the end where he was just playing like 35 minutes a night. And it just, he looked much better. This was his best year since LeBron left, but he can't do that.
Yeah. And to your point, like, I'm just looking at it right now. He averaged 22 and a half minutes per game. So like,
yeah,
he also played 74 games, which is probably his high in like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I mean, he would like, what I will say about JB Bickerstaff, and like, this is something that a lot of like Kelsey Russo at The Athletic wrote about a bunch this year, that he's kind of nuts. Like he just comes up with ideas and just will try them. And like, Kevin Love basically playing is a wing off the bench more often than not was like a crazy idea that actually kind of worked. Again, because he would play with Allen and or Mobley, who would cover for him. So yeah, I mean, it was a good year. I am the big issue, and I think we can talk about all of it, but the big issue is the offense. Like even pre-injury, we just were not, like, we just weren't scoring too much. Like, I think our best offensive lineup was something like Garland, Markkanen, and maybe Mobley offensively. And they still weren't, or Garland, Mobley, and Love, some combo like that. And they just were not scoring at kind of the level you'd want.
Yeah, I mean, I think... So, like, this is where they're, like, I would say looking at the team just from the very broadly, right? I'm not saying that there's not nuance to be had here. But it's like Garland, Mobley, Allen are the three guys that have established themselves at a level where you're like, they matter. Like, they are all parts of the future, very, like, central parts of the future. And, you know... Can Okoro get to that level? Maybe, yeah. I mean, sure, why not? I'm not his biggest fan. I feel like in the play-in games especially, you could just see that, man, his offense has so far to go because Brooklyn literally
neither team defended him.
Yeah, they just didn't defend him. They were like, "Yeah, no, you can just keep fucking shooting. We don't care." And like I think he made one. He made a three, I think, at some point. And I remember it was like the next time down the floor, they still were just like, "No, that's fine. Like, you can continue to have open threes." And it wasn't like they were leaving him open and rotating out to him to contest. They were just leaving him open and were like, "Okay, let's."
Yep. Yeah, they didn't rotate. No. They did, and I mean, that was something we started to see towards the end of the year too, is that teams, like, it wasn't just Okoro, but like Stevens was another guy that teams just were like, okay, well, if the Cavs are going to just try to score points from kind of like the, like, very high percentage shots, we're just not going to guard these guys that can't shoot.
Yeah, and like, and I think that it's just like really, because you have, and I think Mobley will eventually be able to shoot. Honestly, I'll say this, like, I love Mobley, but I don't ever project him as being like a super awesome 3-point shooter, like, which doesn't matter really. Like, if he's, you know, 33-34% with everything else he's giving you, you just take that. But like, it just makes it so imperative then that those guys at the 2 and the 3 are really good 3-point shooters. And also, like, I do think one thing that stood out, and I don't know how much of a concern this is, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. When Mobley and Allen had their injuries at various points, I think you really saw that, again, I didn't watch like every Cavs game or anything like that, but like, it felt like you could then see, okay, as awesome as the defense was, let's stop pretending that like all of these guys are awesome defenders now. And like Garland, especially, again, all-star level point guard play. So this is not exactly like some huge knock on him, but he's not a good defender and he gives decent effort. I think I don't, he's not Trae Young where he just like dies constantly, but he's also limited, right? Like he's not that big. He doesn't have a great wingspan. There's just limitations to what he can give you on defense. And I just think like you saw that also when those guys were out, which again, like your 2 and 3 players, those guys, the wings, they need to be able to shoot and they have to be able to defend and defend well enough where I think like you can ultimately, you know, quote unquote, hide Garland or put him on the weakest perimeter guy or however you want to phrase it. Like that's really what they need, and it'll be interesting to see how they go about it because, I mean, I'm just looking at the roster right now. Like, Lamar Stevens is actually an interesting player. I kind of like him, but he's not a good shooter. You know, Okoro is, we just talked about him. He's a really good defender, but he can't shoot for shit. And his usage is like, I mean, it's ridiculous. The guy shot, he averaged 6.4 shots per game in just under 30 minutes. Like, that's bananas. And then you have like Chetty Osman. You have like a bunch of dudes who are not like, I think Chetty Osman's good, but like he's Chetty Osman. You know what I mean? Like there's just limitations to it. And the Markkanen thing is weird. Like, yeah, he played the three a bunch. I'm curious to get your thoughts. Like, is that something that you think works long term? Because for me, it was just like watching them again. It really felt like Markkanen was another guy who his defense and like it got by when they had Mobley and Allen. But as soon as one of those guys were hurt, let alone both, you could see like, okay, this Markkanen at the 3-3 thing is probably, it only works in a very specific circumstance.
Yeah. So just to jump off on that last point, like I think Markkanen at the 3 was a decision they made kind of by luck. Like they didn't really have another option if they wanted to play the two bigs. And that was kind of, it ended up being okay. When LeVert came in, and this gets to the point about Markkanen, right? So let me back up for a second. I think, as you pointed out, Garland, Mobley, Allen are, I think, locked on starters. I know, it, me included, but there are people saying that in the future, the idea is Mobley kind of becomes the sole five. And maybe that is in the future, but I think we're a few years away from that at a minimum.
And also, like, Allen is so good, he's kind of forced his way. Like, why would you break that up? You know what I mean?
And they play really well together, too.
Yeah.
I think those three are locked in, which means you really have two positions, and they're more or less both your wing positions that can be filled by the player that's going to take you to the next level. So I think Markkanen is not long-term or even really next year going to be holding down one of those spots. The player that's interesting to me, even more interesting than Sexton, is LeVert, because, like, when you just watch LeVert after the trade, he did not look good.
So I actually want to ask you about this, because we've had Caitlin Cooper on the pod before, and she obviously watched a shit ton of LeVert this year and last year too. And what she said was, like, before the trade, LeVert was very much in, like, kind of a fuck you, I'm getting mine mode, like running pick and rolls constantly and just kind of like doing his own thing. Is that how he played when he was in Cleveland too? Where it was like, not maybe, I don't want to say selfish, but the way he plays is like very much built around his own usage and like what he can do with the ball in his hands.
Yeah. So the thing that was going on Cavs Twitter that I thought was the best comparison is, and I thought, like, it's not perfect because their skills are a little bit different, but was Iman Shumpert. And again, that he played for the Cavs, he played for the Knicks, but that's why Cavs Twitter, he's like the point of reference. Because if you look at LeVert's, like, underlying numbers with the Cavs, they're fantastic, right? Like, LeVert is part of the more or less the best lineups since after the trade. But, like, when you watch him, it's just, like, he does not have the offensive awareness that you would need, like, especially once Mobley and Allen go down, right? And it's kind of like you have to score, because without those two, you can't defend. And he did, like, there were some games he was great, and then there were some games he was just, like, it didn't look like he was just trying to get his to get his. Like, it felt like Sexton-y in the sense that he was getting his because it felt like, for him, the best way to help the team win. And I just don't think, and you know what, I mean, to a certain degree, the underlying stats are the underlying stats. Maybe my kind of, maybe my eye test is wrong, and like, he really was great for us, but it just didn't, I don't know if that is more of a small sample size error, and that long term, it's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so, like, what I, there's, like, a few things going on with the Cavs offense, right? And I think this is where the two bigs thing is a little bit tricky. And, like, it's, like, look, Allen is 23, Mobley is 20, Garland is 22. It's not, like, you don't need to have it all figured out today, right? But, like, I think where it gets a little bit tricky is Allen is a play finisher right now. Mobley, I think, has the potential to be a real offensive hub, like one of these, I don't want to say unicorn bigs because, like, they just say that about everybody now, but one of the rare big men that actually is a player you can run offense through and can eventually profile as a first or second option type of player, which is super rare for big guys in the NBA now, right? It's like, of the big guys that profile like that, it's basically Embiid, Jokic, Cat. Is there another big guy that does that? I don't think so.
No. No. I mean, like, the close, next close.
Bam, maybe. Aiden,
but yeah. Yeah. But, like, both Ayton and Bam are guys that, like,
they're play finishers. That,
but they're not. They're right. Yeah. They, if they're, when those teams are at their best, they're play finishers.
Yeah. And so, what I was like, what I think is tricky is you need those strong wings that can play off the ball, shoot, and defend. But you, like, they also lacked shot creation, which is, I think, like, this is where, and we'll talk about Sexton a little bit later in more detail, but, like, this is where I think losing Sexton early in the year hurts you. And obviously the Rubio injury was a real killer, where it's like, because of those injuries, they had to start searching for, like, more ball handling and shot creation. And sometimes that leads you to acquire imperfect fits. Because I think, like, if you gave you know, why can't I think of his name? Altman, Kobe Altman. If you gave him truth serum and you were like, is Caris LeVert that really the type of player that you would have ideally liked to acquire at the deadline, assuming the team was healthy? I think he would say no. But like, they were in a position to make the playoffs and they needed somebody desperately that could handle the ball and create a shot, because they tried the Rondo thing. Rondo was terrible. I know he's been washed, but he should really retire at this point.
My favorite was like Cavs Twitter. There's like a segment of it that, and like, you love this as a fan, right? Because these people are just fans. And like, it was like, playoff Rondo, baby. Like, we just got to trudge through towards the playoffs and then he'll come good. And that didn't work out.
Yeah. And so like, I think that, like, they just needed somebody that could create a shot. And, you know, so they end up getting LeVert for what was effectively a protected first and a second, right? I think that was the deal. Is that correct?
Yeah, and Rubio.
Yeah, and Rubio. Yeah, and Rubio wasn't going to play. Yeah, and he wasn't going to play. Yeah. Right, so it didn't matter. And, like, I know they gave up a high second. They end up keeping the first this year, right? I think it's lottery protected again next year.
Yep, yep. It's 14th this year, so it just – which is perfect.
Yeah, and so I think, like – I mean – it's really hard to judge that LeVert deal, because I get why they made it, even though it wasn't the perfect fit. I don't think they ever thought it was the perfect fit, but it was like, hey, look, we had the opportunity to get in the playoffs. We haven't done that since LeBron left. And really, we haven't, this is like the first year they've looked like a really capable, like a competent, capable team. They were really fun to watch when they were healthy this year, I thought. And I get that. So it's like, LeVert is interesting. I don't think he's long for Cleveland. Even if they extend him, I don't think he's somebody who's going to stick around there long term. But like, we know how the league works now. We know that free agency is dead. We know that everything is about exchanging contracts and all that kind of shit. LeVert, very clearly, whatever. I'm not a huge fan of LeVert, but like, and I think he's actually pretty polarizing player on Twitter, because there are people that really like him, and then there are people who are like, look at his advanced stats, he sucks, he's not an efficient scorer. And like, I get that, and I think that's like why I view him more as a sixth man microwave. Like, he's like the type of guy who on aggregate is meh, but he has games and stretches where he's like absolutely just scorching hot, cooking dudes, right? Like, he has games where he just lights teams up. And, you know, I just think there will always be a market for him in trade. Maybe it won't be, you won't be able to recoup exactly what you gave up, but you will be able to move him. You will be able to use him in an effort to reshape the roster. And that's kind of okay. Like, the LeVert thing doesn't really bother me. I know I've seen like some Cavs fans that were like, hated that trade and hated watching him and all that kind of shit. But like, I thought it was fine. I understood it. I had no problem with it. I thought it was one of those trades that was like, it made sense for both teams.
Yeah. I liked the trade at the time, right? Because kind of you pointed this out. So this is the first point. There wasn't really much cost. Like, I think, and like, I am so guilty of this, as I spent a good portion of last week reading about potential players the Cavs could draft at 14. Like, NBA fans overvalue draft picks pretty significantly. And it is the natural thing to do as a fan, right? Is just, and like, 14th is not a bad pick, but odds are that whoever we're taking at 14 is not going to have a net positive impact for at least two more years. Maybe that's wrong, but I think just like, throughout NBA history, that seems to be kind of what you look at. But second, I think that Kobe Altman, also his entire career as Cavs GM, has been tasked with doing one thing above everything else, which is getting assets and flipping them for more assets. And I think that is not the mode they want to be in right now. But given the situation they were in going into the trade deadline, it made a lot of sense, right? To be like, one last time, let's buy an asset and we'll flip them for more later. And I think that that's what the LeVert deal was. I think they are going to keep him. Like, I don't think they're going to let him go. And I think, like, I mean, Sexton to me is the one that is more of a question mark because, like, I don't know. Sexton doesn't really have, like, any legs to stand on. And I think Kobe Altman's going to be a little bit strict kind of in negotiating that deal. And I think Sexton may just walk. Like, I think they may just not be able to agree.
I mean, I think Sexton's gone. Like, I think he's one way or the other, he's leaving. So the Sexton thing is weird because I think he very clearly, like, the guy can score. He can score efficiently. He gets into the paint, you know, almost at will. Like, there are things he does very well. And he's improved, I think, as a scorer every year. I feel like his playmaking has improved, even though it's not ideal. Like, he still is geared to be a scorer first. But, like, it's just a bad fit in Cleveland, especially because Garland, you know, he took the opportunity, right, to run the show himself and he was an all-star. So it is what it is. But, like, it's the thing with him and Garland isn't going to work. They were terrible in the minutes he played this year, which, again, wasn't a lot, but it was also, like, kind of in line with what has been the case throughout his career in Cleveland, even with Garland or without Garland. Basically, every lineup, he's just been a negative. I don't know if that makes him a bad player. I just think it hasn't worked out in Cleveland for a variety of reasons for him. And, you know, this is where I'm really interested to see what Cleveland does, because you can't let him walk for nothing. You know, you've had him on the roster for 4 years. You developed him for three of those before he got hurt this year, obviously. He's an efficient, what did he score, like 24 points per game last year on 57 true shooting? Like, that's really good for a guard. Like, 57 true shooting for a guard is above league average. That's very, very good. The guy can score. He can do it efficiently. And he can score at all three levels, even if his three-point shooting, you kind of wish he would take more. This is such a weird thing, and it's kind of interesting to see how, like, restricted free agency has changed in nature, because I feel like a few years ago, it was always seen as, like, restricted free agency is totally tilted in the incumbent team's favor, and I think that is the case if the incumbent team 100% wants to retain that player. But, like, when you get into a situation like this where, gun to their head, I don't think Cleveland wants to keep Sexton. But I also think they are probably acutely aware of, like, we need to use him as an asset to bolster our roster. And if he walks, that's a disaster. So, like, it's an interesting thing they have to manage, because what if you ultimately have to agree to a contract because, you know what I mean? Like, are they going to get some, like, let's say Detroit comes in, because Detroit's been rumored to be really interested in Sexton. What are you getting from Detroit? Are you going to try to get Jeremy Grant? I mean, that's possible. I actually think that.
I mean, Jeremy Grant's a name that, like, every Cavs beat writer is linking the Cavs to, so that actually would not surprise me. To me, the issue the Cavs are having is, like, if they keep him, then they have to wrestle with the fact that you are going to be playing a guy a lot of minutes that can't play with your best player. Or assuming that best player is Garland, right? If Mobley kind of takes the next step or Allen takes the next step, like, that's different. But, and I mean, you see this with the Warriors right now, right? Which is that, like, last night, Jordan Poole wasn't doing that great. And same with game one. And game one, he was better. But, like, Gary Payton Jr., I guess, comes in and plays really well. And, like, the idea there is that, like, the Warriors have all these guys that can play with Steph Curry. no matter what. And right, you throw different ones out there for different things, but they all work with the hub. And I mean, saying like Sexton's going to be the sixth man, well, okay. So how many minutes of the game is your sixth man playing? Because if Garland's going to be playing 32 to 35 minutes a night, then your sixth man's really not playing six man minutes. And so I think that that is going to be the problem the Cavs have, is that like they will be forfeiting games early on in the season playing those two together, because it takes every defensive advantage they get from playing Allen and Mobley together and just gets rid of it. Like, because Sexton, Garland isn't great defensively, but I think when Garland like has those two behind him, he plays pretty well. If you have Sexton, he can't be as aggressive, right? Like, he just can't, because they're both going to get blown by too much. So, I think Jeremy Grant would be interesting. My fear with Grant is I just don't know it. And, like, Grant's such a good defender, too, like, or in terms of, like, being a rather large dude. But I don't know, man. Like, I think Grant is the dream. I don't know if that is what Sexton actually gets you.
Yeah, I think that's always the tricky part with these sign-in trades, because who are you most likely to get? And, like, the restricted free agency, the difficulty of it is you're very unlikely to get anything close to even, like, 90% of what you're trading out. Like, last year, I think Lonzo got moved for, what, Satoransky, fucking Temple, and...
Right. And that was coming off a really good year, too.
Yeah, and a second-round pick. So it's like, Sexton, I'm pretty confident he's not viewed as positively as Lonzo was at that time. And I just wonder, like, what are you going to get back for him? And I know, like, there was a lot of reporting last year about the Knicks' interest in him. That seems to have cooled a lot. I haven't seen anything credible about interest in Sexton. I imagine that they probably don't feed. I mean, his market is so weird, right? Because he didn't play this year. So, like, all you have are what we know about Sexton are individually does a lot of things that are, like, extremely encouraging. But then literally all of it, you can go year by year and lineups and play with the on-off and, you know, three-man units, four-man units, whatever. It's basically all negative with Colin right on the court. And, like, I don't think that means that he's forever doomed to be a negative player. But there is definitely a kind of disconnect between how Colin views himself and what he is in the league and what caliber of player he is and what I think is probably the ideal role for him. Like, he is a guy who I would bet the team that does acquire him and that does pay him his next contract is ultimately going to regret it. But the team that gets him after that, or the team that pays him after this next deal expires, he'll probably be established at that point as, like, okay, you're not a starter, but you're an awesome sixth man bench scorer type dude. And he will slot into that role and get a contract commensurate with, like, what that type of player is worth. And all of a sudden will be viewed much more positively. And I think, like, this contract can be really interesting because I think he's going to get paid like a starter.
He's going to get $15 million.
I think he's going to get more, man. Like,
I mean, he could. Like, I think $15 million, we're talking, like, floor. Like, whether it's from the Cavs or somebody else, somebody's giving him 15.
So what I saw was last week, I think Michael Scotto had one of the Cavs beat guys on. I forget who it was. But they were talking about Sexton. He said the floor is like, I think the Cavs would do something between 15 to 18 million, but Colin mm-hmm. wants something between 18 and 22. And that's kind of like, let's say if you use the average, so it'd be like the Cavs willing to do 16 and a half, Colin wants 20. There's a disconnect there. And can you bridge that? And like, I guess what the Cavs have to answer is this, is it worth it? Like, let's say that they just kind of, you know, do their due diligence and realize that, hey, look, like whatever we get for Colin right now is just not up to the value we think he should net us as an asset. So why don't we just go ahead and pay him and then deal with this later? Like, I really would not want to do that if I were them. I think that...
Yeah, like, I agree. And this is not a great comparison just because of, like, there's different differentiation value still. But, like, it goes back to me to, like, an Andrew Wiggins problem, right? Like, I know he's turned out pretty well for the Warriors, but, like, when the Warriors paid a crapload for D'Angelo Russell, that is not who they thought they would trade him for. Like, I guarantee you. Like, that's not what they thought. And I just don't, like, my fear with Sexton is that they pay him a lot of money. Sexton, because of the nature of how he will be played, whether it's with the Cavs or with somebody else, right? Because, like, a team like Detroit, like, I think they may be all right next year. But, like, I don't think it's going to be because of Sexton, right? I think Sexton's probably going to be a negative player for them next year or wherever he goes. And if it's with the Cavs, it's going to be because you're playing him with Darius Garland. And, like, there's – Garland is very willing to share the ball, which is great when you're playing with Mobley and Allen, who are two guys also willing to share the ball. Less good with Sexton, who is – like, he has to be the primary everything when he's on the court. Like, he can be kind of a secondary scorer, but the primary playmaker. But he needs the ball. Otherwise, he's just not that good. And I just – that is a type of guy, I think, to your point, right? And, like, another Cav, like Jordan Clarkson is another good example of this, right? Where it takes him a few teams and a lot of years. And then, like, he'll settle in somewhere. But I think if you're the Cavs, I know, right, you don't want to – if you can help it, you don't want to lose him for nothing. But I think losing him for nothing may be the better bet than giving him a giant extension.
Yeah, it's exactly. The point is, like, he's not like a wing that you could just – well, we really don't think he's a long-term piece, but we can keep him, and he fits okay. Like, Colin's a good player, but – he fits terribly with Garland. And to your point, like, if he's on the floor, the only way to extract value from him is to, like, it's to give him the ball a bunch, right? Like, right. Give him the ball, let him cook and all these kind of things. But that actively takes away from Garland. I think it also, more importantly, maybe even it takes away opportunities to give Mobley more on-ball reps. And see what he can do as more of a central part of the offense and not just a play finisher, but more of an offensive hub. And is that really worth it just to, like, get a top 50, like the 16th pick in a draft versus the 13th pick? I mean, I don't even know what the difference is exactly, but yeah. You kind of get my point. It's like, is it really better to do that and have to deal with it for the marginal gain you might get in an asset return? And, like, this is interesting.
Well, and here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. If the Cavs extend him, they're over the cap.
Yeah.
Which they're not if they don't. And, like, I think that's small, especially when you have Dan Gilbert.
And also, like, just given how shit free agency is now.
Right. It's not nothing, mm-hmm. though. Like, I think there's still an element to that's, like, an immediate cost that you face right away.
Right. And it's also, like, generally speaking, you don't want to be in the business of hoarding. Like, you don't want to prioritize holding on to your asset just because you don't want it to, like, and I hate talking about players like this, but, like, you know, ultimately we know front offices view players as assets. You don't want to let an asset walk out the door without getting anything in return. But like, I sometimes think that's the wrong way to view it. And yes, you drafted Colin Sexton 8th overall. You ideally don't want a lottery pick who has developed into a pretty talented scorer at the very least. You don't want that player to walk for nothing or for a minimal return. But what you also get if you don't give that, if you let that player go, is simply to not have that player and that salary and not that headache on the books. And I think the Knicks, like the Knicks are actually in a pretty interesting position. I don't, it's not exactly the same, but it's like similar with Randall, where is Randall a good player? Yeah. Did he have a terrible season this past year? Absolutely. Does he fit long-term in New York? And ultimately, like, I don't think the best version of the Knicks, whenever they contend, I don't, you know, whether that's what, 2, 3, 4 years down the line, whatever it is, I don't think it's not going to have Randall on it. It's Randall's not going to be part of it. So are you better off just like moving him, even if it's for just some shitty expiring contract or something? Like, is that better than holding on to him and hoping that he plays better next year and then you can eventually trade him for some type of positive return? Like, I don't think that is really worth it at a certain point. Like, you come to inflection points in franchises, right? Like, directional inflection points where it's like you have to kind of make a move that reorients your team or leans into a specific direction. And I think with the Cavs, like, they found that direction last year when Colin went out. And to bring him back just to, like, you know, maximize your asset return down the line, you know, why are you pulling off the highway, right? You just got back on the highway. You just filled up gas. You just got food. Everybody's, like, full now. You're ready to go for the next 300 miles. Why are you pulling off again? You don't need to pull off the highway again. Just get on the highway. Stay on the highway. Keep going. Like, it's just, what is the point? You know, like, you've got three guys. Like, what, two of them are all-stars this year, right?
Yeah.
You got two all-stars. Yep. You got a third guy who's probably going to be an all-star within 2 years. I would not be, like, I would bet that Mobley's an all-star in year three. And, like, you don't need to sit around and maximize Colin Sexton's asset value. You know, like, if, like, I don't think the Knicks would be interested in Colin Sexton, but just as, like, a very basic example, like, would the Knicks, like, if you can get, I don't know, Fournier for Sexton, like, is Fournier going to be part of the next competitive Cleveland Cavaliers team? No, but he gives you shooting. He's a wing-sized player. Like, he has some playoff experience. You know, like, in general,
I would actually really like Fournier. Like, that deal to me would, like, as a Cavs fan, would be great. Like, I would be thrilled if that was the game plan.
And it's not because,
like, then you get a guy that you can play.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not because Fournier is amazing. It's because Fournier actively, like, whatever you're trying to do on offense with Garland and Mobley and Allen, Fournier can slide into that context and, like, it doesn't take away anything. Will it affect your defense? Like, I don't know, man. I don't see how Fournier is any necessarily worse of a defender than Lauri Markkanen.
He's not. No, there's no way he would be. I actually think Fournier, like, is a just standard, like, average-ish. And I didn't watch you guys a ton this year, but, like, just Fournier's always kind of just been an average-ish defender.
Yeah, he's like, if he's your worst defender, you can be a good defensive team.
Right. And to me, like, Lauri Markkanen, even this year, was not, right? Even Kevin Love was not. The best defender they would have there is Okoro. And as we already talked about, like, when Okoro plays, you're playing 4-on-5. on offense. And, like, the other thing, to go to your Randall point too, I actually think Randall and Sexton, again, I didn't watch a ton of Knicks, but I watched a little bit. Like, what Randle did this year to the fluidity of your offense when he played, because he is a very talented offensive player, maybe you had a bad year, but very talented, is that the amount of offensive sets you run when he is on the court is just less, right? You just have less, because at the end of the day, he is going to shoot the ball a lot. Or he's at least going to be the guy with the ball in his hands. And I think Sexton's kind of the same in a very different way, right? Because Sexton is like a guard, but it ends up being the same idea. And like one of the things the Cavs did super well this year, and again, like Kelsey Russo's written about this, is JB was constantly changing the offensive sets all season long. And so they were just like constantly catching teams off guard. And when Sexton plays, you can't do that, because at the end of the day, like, when Garland is your, like, okay, you got to score and he has the ball, that can go one of 12 different ways, right? And when it's Sexton, it's going more or less one way, one or two ways, right? Which is pull-up shot, or he's just charging to the rim. And I think that if I'm a Cavs, like, if I'm Kobe Altman, that is something I'm considering, is that, like, if you keep Sexton, let's say, like, you can't get rid of him, right, for assets right away. But you keep him, you say, you know what, if he comes back and plays just as good as he did at the start of the season or last season or whenever, then we're going to be able to trade him for a mid-first round pick. That's at the risk of everything that made the Cavs this year, goes away. And, like, does he improve your offense? Yeah. Do I think he makes your defense a lot worse? Also, yeah. Would I rather have good offense and good defense? Yes, but, like, the reality of the Cavs right now is we have a really good defense, and you don't want to get rid of that if you have it.
Are you ready for the NBA champs to be crowned? Join the finals action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can make any $5 NBA bet and get $150 in free bets instantly. Looking to turn another small bet into a big payday during the NBA Finals? With a DraftKings same-game parlay, you can do just that. This NBA season, a customer placed a $5 same-game parlay and won over $5,000. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, total threes made, total rebounds, and more. And boom, you have a shot at an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Make any $5 bet during the NBA Finals and get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code TBPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's why you don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? Like, you have a construct that works, so now you just need to work on finding the pieces that fit in. And, like, this is where so I think for Knicks fans, this is where, because I've heard a lot of people talk about this, is like, or especially recently, where it's like, well, we're weary of the front office. They haven't really done much. The contracts they gave out haven't been good. Other side, like, the drafting has been good, but other than that, what have they really done? And I guess, like, what I don't really get about that is, like, aside from tanking the first year they took over, which, like, yeah, look, can you argue that would have been a more optimal path to follow? Sure. And I'm not even going to, we can argue that constantly, but, like, sure, maybe that's a more optimal way. But they didn't do that, okay? So if we take that, and we say, okay, I'm going to judge them now based on the path they took, which has involved, like, hey, look, let's try to build out our salary cap structure with these contracts, and we're going to try to be good, we're not trying to tank, and all this kind of shit. Like, other than tanking, there was no path that after 2 years was going to yield some, like, contending team. Just given what they had to work with when they came in, they basically had a blank cap sheet. They had RJ Barrett after a rookie year. They had Mitchell Robinson after his second year in the league. They had Frank and Knox, who obviously, like, Frank has was a rotation player for Dallas. Kudos to him. And Knox is going to be in China very soon. Like, it just is what it is. They didn't have anything
with supply chains, though, man. I don't know. Maybe China's going to embargo NBA players.
It's true. But, like, there was no other young talent on the roster that they took over, right? And they had the 8th pick, which they use on Obi Toppin. They take quickly with the 25th pick, which came from a trade they made with the Clippers, where they gave them Marcus Morris. They get quickly. Like, then this year, like, they draft Grimes, they draft Deuce McBride, they trade for Cam Reddish. Like, so this is, like, the young talent they've added. And I don't want to sit here and talk about what I think about each of them, right? The point being is that these are the young pieces they've added. They add some veterans, right? They signed Burks last year, they bring him back. They signed Noel last year, they bring him back. They acquire Rose at a very minimal cost. Dennis Smith Jr. in a second-round pick. They bring him back this year. They bring in Fournier. They bring in, they take the shot on Kemba, and they extend Julius Randle. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like, is this perfect? No, obviously not. And obviously they are, like, the hardest thing, I think, in the NBA is to take those gradual steps. And actually, a good example of this would be a team like Boston, who I think both of us, after last year, we were like, man, they are so fucked. How are they going to, like, do anything? And sometimes it's like, the path for you is just to keep your roster together because you have young guys and see how it plays out. And I think they've made some interesting moves in the margins, which I've talked about on a lot of pods recently, but, like, the Horford deal was great for them. Then they get Derek White at the deadline. Like, those are two, even Tice, like, those three kind of margin moves are really, really good. But the main development has just been, like, Tatum taking a leap, Brown establishing himself as an all-star, Grant Williams takes a leap, Peyton Pritchard has taken a little bit of a leap, Smart is smart. Like, it's just staying the course. And I think, like, with the Knicks, they're in a weird in-between phase where it's like, okay, we're not tanking, and we don't have a star yet that we've developed on the roster. But, like, if you look at how they've structured their contracts and all that stuff, this summer and into the next trade deadline were very clearly targeted as, like, a critical stage of your roster construction and team building, because you have all of these expiring contracts, you have picks that you've amassed, like, you need to consolidate talent now because of the talent base you've accumulated via draft and free agency and trades. So, like, this is just, to me, a very weird in-between phase they've set themselves up for. But, like, I'm not, like, team building is just, like, it's not linear, and it's also not always clear what the path is. Like, it's sometimes you have to just kind of, like, get into an uncomfortable zone and kind of weed through it and see what comes out on the other end. Like, that's not to, like, praise the Knicks front office, but it's more like, I think we have this tendency, not we, I don't want to sound like I'm preaching to people either, but, like, there is this idea of, like, okay, well, they went 41-31 last year, so they need to maintain that or they need to improve, and if they don't do those things, then this is bad, and they need to make significant changes to, like, get us back on track. And I do think the Knicks need to make significant changes, but I feel like they were always going to make significant changes at this point in time. And it's just hard to see that when you're stuck in, like, a season that was really miserable in a lot of ways due to a variety of factors. And I think Cleveland was kind of in that place before this season. And then, you know, all of a sudden Sexton gets hurt, and the team booms after, like, for, like, 35 games, and you're like, okay, well, now, actually, we're back on track. and we know exactly what we're doing. Like, it's not clear all the time, even for front offices and fans who live, you know, with the team day by day, but like, it's not always clear. And I just think you need to give it a little patience when there's already reasons to be optimistic with the talent that's been put in place. I don't know if any of that made sense.
Yeah. I think just to like hop on your Celtics point, the interesting thing about the Celtics that I think gave them confidence to stay course goes all the way back to the first year they had Kyrie Irving, right? And they make the playoffs, Kyrie's hurt, and then they go on a miracle run where, frankly, they should have beaten the Cavs in that seven-game series, but they don't. They lose because LeBron is LeBron, and Jeff Green had the game of a lifetime. And they lose. And then the year after that, right, like, I remember start of the year, people were like, and like, I even said this was possible, like, Kyrie comes back, that team may win it all this year. Like, and they didn't, right? Everybody kind of took a step back, and except for Kyrie, who just stayed at like his normal dickhead level throughout the entirety of that season. And then, but then they have the Kemba year, right? The first Kemba year where they look great again. And just over time, what happened is Boston just like established a baseline level where they kind of decided, you know what, like, this baseline level is good enough for us. And if Tatum and Brown improve, we will be able to become like given the strength of the East, like where they're strong, where they're weak. If Tatum and Brown improve, we can make it to the finals, and then who knows what can happen. I think the Heat this year are actually another example of that, where like when they they make the finals and get just like ass whooped by the Lakers. And yeah, they make a lot of changes over the last few years, but like the core of that team stayed together. And I know like it didn't work out this year, but I mean, like, for me, like, that is the sign of a team where it's like, okay, we know we're good and we can stay course. I think what kind of happened to the Knicks this year, and what I think is legitimately plausible that can happen to the Cavs next year, is the factors that went their way the year before just don't go their way. And to me, that is when, as a team, like as a general construct, you really need to show how much you believe in what you have, right? If the Cavs really believe in this core and they, let's say, lose in the play-ins again next year or don't even make the play-in, then figure out what it takes to keep this core together. And I think, like, you guys are in a little bit of a different situation because it seems like some of your young guys that really just were not as good last year look really good this year. And then the guys that were really good last year did not look good at all this year.